Hey everybody, welcome to Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with...
Paul A. Presenza, known as the Moo Cow. Moo!
Alright, and we are about to watch an awesome movie that I picked. I'm really excited to watch it. We're going to watch The Karaoke Kid.
Yay, Chris Siva!
It's a Chris Siva movie, Paul Presenza has not seen yet.
Nope. My first adventure in this part of the Seaververse.
Yes, so we'll see what we think and everything. But until then, let's listen to some
mood music.
And we're back.
Yay.
I guess this is your first time watching Karaoke Kid.
It sure is.
And I'm excited to hear your thoughts. But before we do that, I guess I will start with telling some people a little bit about this movie. So Karaoke Kid was written and directed by Chris Siva. It was produced by executive produced by Heidi Martinuzzi, who stars as the main character's mom. So I think that's why she got the role, because she's never really acted in anything else that Chris has ever done. In fact, a few people in this movie have never acted in another movie. Well, no, actually, I think every single person else has acted in something.
I was going to ask you about that, because I don't remember seeing her in any other films. And I think I would have, because she's actually kind of full of milfy goodness.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, she definitely looks like somebody who was probably his, could play his mom. She's of the age.
Well, only because he was so young, Sean Green, so young.
Oh, definitely. So let me kind of give you guys an idea of what this movie is about. Basically, it stars Sean Green as A.J. Stabone. A.J. Stabone is actually a real guy, and this is somewhat based on some misadventures that A.J. has gotten himself into that he's told to Chris, and Chris exaggerated it to the 10th degree.
So this is based on a true story. I did not know that little bit.
Yeah, I tried to not tell you that because I wanted you to be surprised on the podcast.
A little nugget of info.
But that's what I heard, that's what I remember hearing, is that this was actually based on AJ's, life. And so AJ does not star in the movie, but later on in a lot of Chris Siva's other films, AJ Stabone is one of the cast. Mostly he plays, I want to say it was Mowgli in the movies that he did. And there's also another character he plays called Choach. That AJ plays. But anyway, he's not in this movie. He just, he let Sean Green play him. Sean Green and AJ are were best friends. I don't know if they still are. I don't know much about what they're up to now and what, but this was shot almost 15 years ago or something. Or wait, almost 20 years ago. Holy.
2005,
okay. So almost 15 years ago. 14 years ago, this was shot, and it doesn't hold up as quite as well as I remember it. I remember this film being super, super funny. But what I do know and what I do like about it is a great vehicle for Heather Maxson.
Yay!
But I guess I need to get back to the story. So basically, A.J. Stabone comes to Wellsville from California, just like they all do in those movies. They, cross country all the way from...
Like an airborne.
Yeah, an airborne. And also in...
Ski Wolf.
Well, not really. Ski Wolf, they... Yeah. But anyway, airborne and what is it? What's that movie? Karate Kid.
Oh, yeah.
Which this movie is actually supposedly a parody of, and there's a lot of little nods to Karate Kid in the movie, especially since I'm a Karate Kid fanatic. I pick up on all those things, and there's a lot of great lines in it. And then, so basically, AJ comes from California to Wellsville. He ends up wanting to be a, I guess he wants to be a what is it, like, just a normal kid.
Right.
You know, he just wants to go in there, have a good time, and he first thing he does is he runs into this kid named Sundance, played by Henrik Budnick Couteau, as they have lovingly called him in his stuff. I guess he looks like Budnick from Salute Your Shorts. And so they called Budnick Couteau in the credits and everything like that. Henrik Couteau plays Sundance, who is just this typical, you know, sidekick kind of character. And then they meet Becky Nippleton.
Yay!
Played by the beautiful Heather Maxson, who we've actually met. Paul and I met her.
Very nice. Very nice. Gotta love her.
We did a photo shoot with her, you know, when she came to visit in Williamsburg when she was on her way to North Carolina or something. So.
Right. I forget exactly what she was going for, but I do remember how she loved her K-pop.
She definitely loved K-pop. So we were... so anyway, Becky Nippleton is like his the girl that he has his sets his eye on, and he ends up finding out that she once went out once with Ricky the Gooch champion.
It's so weird because you know he's you know keeps saying about how they had this special moment, and the moment was something along the lines of. He, like, shot his pants, and then she told everybody that she farted and, you know, covered for him. Because, you know, that's the typical Chris Siever, you know, joke that he likes to do. It's usually potty humor, but it was kind of funny. It's just a, you know, that's the special moment.
That's well, it's funny because it's not like anybody wouldn't believe it because that girl farts.
A lot.
All the time.
A lot.
And we'll get into that because there's a little bit of that, you know, whatever. But anyway... So, Ricky the Gooch champion, which, what kind of, like, villain is named the Gooch?
I know.
And that's the comedy of it, is, like, that he's named this really nasty, like, name, and he's, doesn't even know it, doesn't even realize it.
I guess he's supposed to be the Cobra Kai kind of person.
Oh, yeah, he's Johnny Lawrence. he's blonde, and it works, and, you know.
Sort of. I mean, it's such an awful mullet.
Yeah. So he ends up, you know, I guess saying, you know, basically stay away from my girl, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, leaves. Or no, does karaoke and kicks the new kid's ass. And
the music does. The actual singing of the karaoke does. So he's got to, like, pretend that he's getting punched and kicked and beaten up. It's kind of amusing.
Oh, before that, we meet Jesse Ames' character.
Right.
I forgot what her name was, but she was obsessed with Hall & Oates.
Oh, dear.
And, like, that just became the running joke is, like, she loves H&O, as she calls them. And that's all she talks about is, like, H&O this and
Eek.
Hall & Oates that, you know, whatever. So, so she, you know, that's the kind of the running joke of that character. And then when we met Ricky, we also met... The other group in his gang, there's Josh Swire. The
minions.
Yep, his minions. And I'm trying to still remember what their characters' names. Their characters' names are just really silly.
Yeah, they're usually silly throwaways.
Yeah. So it was...
Cyrus is one of them.
Cyrus the... You know, no, Kyrus.
Kyrus.
Kyrus the Virus, which is actually named after John Karius, who was a... One of Chris Siever's old friends, who happened to also be one of the actors in, like, Filthy McNasty and a few of his other movies. He was also in Filthy McNasty-er and stuff like that. And John used to be called John Kyrus, even though his real name is John Karius, I believe. It's K-A-R-Y-S, something like that. So Karius and... he ended up, you know, they ended up calling him Kyrus the Virus was his nickname.
Hmm.
So they threw that in for Travis Indovina's character.
I'm curious to know how that all came about.
I guess you're going to have to listen to, like, commentaries and other things. And I think that's.
And then there was wasn't there the chick named Titty something or other?
Titty McIntosh.
There you go, Titty McIntosh.
And
that's a great name.
I forgot I don't know if that was her name in the movie or if that's what they called her for the credits. I don't know. Anyway, it was
a great name.
It was an interesting character. Obviously, she just had big titties, and that was the running thing with her. She at one point actually did explode some milk into. That's
right, some felonious milkage.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So I guess let's, okay, so going on, this is going to be really hard to explain because there's a lot that goes on in this movie. For a movie that's only like 1 hour and 10 minutes.
I know, it's jam-packed full of sewerage.
Yeah, so, but really, not really, and we'll get to that in a second, but I'll tell you something that, like, really, it's only a 40-minute movie mixed in with, like, 30 minutes of, like, an ending that just goes on for way too long, and we'll get into that.
The singing parts.
Yeah, so after that, he really wants to get with Becky with an I.
Right.
You know, and he tries his hardest to kind of just, you know, date her and everything, and they end up going on a date and everything, and the Gooch finds them again.
This is at the skating
rink. Skating rink right. And everything. But before then, there was a character named Pepilolo. I don't even know. Like, it was Pepe, you know?
Right.
And he was a character that basically was like the Mr. Miyagi of the group. And he was trying to, wants to train young AJ. And AJ's like, I'm not interested in this. Then when they go on the date and Ricky the Gooch and his friends come in to visit, they end up having, he ends up having to actually train. Well, first of all, he goes to their master and says that they're going to enter the competition. And then they're supposed to do like a sweet montage, but they don't show it.
No, it's probably for the best too.
Yeah, and then they end up going and he's ready to do the battle. Then the battle takes, like, literally, like, 30 minutes of too much singing. And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into our thoughts on that. And then, but with amazing cameos.
Right, right.
By both Lloyd Kaufman and Debbie Rochon from Troma.
Yay! But before you forget, don't forget who plays Pepe.
Mm. That's true. Pappy was played by Casey Bowker,
yay,
who is a staple in this stuff, and was in Ski Wolf, which we reviewed last year. Actually, a few of the people were in Ski Wolf.
And he's typically the guy, if you're familiar with the Seaverse, who does Teen Ape. And it, you know, I for a moment there, I wondered how different the movie would have been had he been trained by Teen Ape instead of the Miyagi kind of guy.
Well, if you notice. And this is an interesting thought. You know, this is an interesting thing. So I don't think you would have picked up on this. You know how the movie is set in Wellsville? It wasn't set where? In Bonejack Heights.
Oh, yeah. There
so
you
this
go.
Is a non-Bonejack movie.
Gotcha.
So there was no Teen Ape.
And that's a good thing, because I don't really particularly care for Bonejack. Teen Ape, I can take or leave sometimes, depending on how obnoxious he is. But Bonejack, I just could not stand.
Yeah, Bonejack is a character that, I don't know, he's a silly character. He's been in a lot of the Chris Seaver movies, and Chris plays him, and I think Chris doesn't even like playing him or something, because he retired him.
Did not need him at all.
Right, and it would have done well with Teen Ape. I don't think it would have been much different. I think it would have been the same. There was a new character that Casey wanted to play.
Right. Plus, you don't necessarily have to put Teen Ape in everything,
mm-hmm.
which is good because that's one of the better things about Chris Seaver is that even though he has these stock characters in the Seaververse, they don't necessarily always show up and wear out their welcome in every single movie, which is good.
That is true. They don't do that. So anyway, and in this movie, like I said, it's not a Seaververse movie type thing. I think he was trying to do something that would get him some more popularity and stuff, like more mainstream type of thing.
Yeah.
Still with his sort of silly fart humor.
Right. And the thing is that, of course, the other aspect that we should mention is that typically, most of the time, Chris Seaver is doing horror-type parodies. I mean, they're usually still parodies and movies and such, but they're usually horror-oriented, whereas this has got no horror elements in it whatsoever.
Whatsoever. I mean, the only horror element you could say is that Sean Green wears, Jason shirt or something, right. or whatever. So you could tell he's a horror nerd. But aside from that, there's no horror element whatsoever, and it's not supposed to be.
Right.
It is supposed to be a comedy, and I think that's a little bit of the charm of why I originally liked it, and stuff is that it was a comedy, you know. It wasn't, it's a little bit more like, they did another movie called Geek War, which was kind of like this, except, I don't know, I like this one better, so maybe I need to rewatch that, because maybe I like the other one better, but it, you know, now, because I think things, maybe my tastes have changed a little bit.
Mm.
And so, let's get into that, okay? Because I said earlier that I had originally loved this movie. Like, this movie I held high as regards Chris Seaver, and that was a while ago that I had, like, you know. And I think, A, it was my first introduction to Heather Maxson.
Yay!
And I absolutely adore her. I think she's a great actress, and she's wonderful in the movies. And
fun. Always fun.
Yeah, always fun. Always plays these off-the-wall characters. Not afraid to just go all out and everything, and I think that's great. And then, it was also my first time watching a Chris Seaver comedy, you know, right? It was the first time watching something that wasn't his horror and his silliness, and he's done a few things that are, like, less horror, more comedy and stuff. Like, I think even Teenage Goes to Camp wasn't really horror-like. I mean, they might have a little horror in it, but, like, it was really just a goofy, silly comedy. And that's, you know, and I think that's one of the Weird Seas, another movie that he had done that I don't know if you got a chance to see yet or not, but
no.
Wonderful movie, but it was a comedy. It was a 80s throwback comedy, and that's what he likes to do. This is an 80s throwback comedy.
Right, right.
And I think that is what I liked about it until I saw it recently, and I don't know if my tastes have changed or if, you know, it's just not as good.
Well, like I had said earlier when I was watching this the first time, I said, you know, there's an awful lot of similarities between this and Ski Wolf that I saw, just the plot structure and everything, because, again, they're both, you know, feasting on the 80s tropes that we talked about before. I just thought that he did it better in Ski Wolf than he did in this particular one, mainly because of the way that the way the movie wraps up. Like, mm-hmm. like you said, it seems to take an awful lot of patience to have to sit through all of the singing, and by then that joke has already sort of run its course, so it's really not very funny anymore. By the time you have to sit through all of those, you know, all those songs. And you don't even get, like, snippets of the songs. You're getting a lot of it.
I know. And, I mean, we've talked about that before, because in our podcasts and in our video stuff or whatever, we have to be careful with showing off music because, like, YouTube gets mad and attacks you and kind of takes things down. Or the podcast, you can actually get sued for using, music for too long or something. So, he did it, this is the kind of movie that you can't get in, like, a regular store or something because they can't sell it because of the music copyrights.
Right.
Because he uses the music for, like, I mean, literally for at least 2 minutes of each song.
And I don't know what it would cost in order to get the rights for those songs, but far more than probably what it cost to make the actual movie itself.
Well, let's talk about the music real quick, because there was some good ones, and there's some the first one was
Rolling Stones,
Paint It Black,
right?
And Brad Austin, who plays Ricky, the Gooch Champion, did such a great job.
Oh, yeah, he's got a good set of pipes for this guy. I mean, I was impressed.
Except when we listened to...
The Hair song.
No, the Hair song was awful.
So bad.
And like, that was the one he used.
I know.
At the end, I'm like...
So terrible.
Did they run out of ideas for that? I don't know, but...
I mean, I get it because he's got that ridiculous mullet thing going on, but still, it just... it kind of fell flat.
Not like his hair.
No, not like his hair, but yeah, you know what I mean.
But yeah, no, it was bad. And then I didn't like the Ramones version either. And so I'm like, the only one I like he should have done that for the end. Yeah, you know, that yeah. Like the Painted Black was his best work.
It was.
And so anyway, it was the first song that you hear. Then you hear the Ramones, I Want to Be Sedated.
Which I kind of liked. I mean, maybe his voice wasn't as good as the Rolling Stones one, but, you know, I always loved the Ramones, so.
Yeah, so you'll take that over anything.
Over any other song in the whole movie, frankly.
Oh, yeah, there's no real good songs in this movie.
They got cheesier and cheesier.
Let's do the music. I guess we're still talking about the music, so. There's a Hall & Oates song, yeah. You know, and then there's, what is it? What did Travis play? That was the guy with the crazy hair that, I don't remember. He played some kind of metal thing, I think.
Yeah, some kind of crappy metal thing.
Yeah.
I made up my mind.
All right. See, this is why we're not doing Karaoke Kid 2.
Oh, you're going to get me singing now.
Yeah, but then there was another one that Josh Swire did one as well, and
I don't remember his.
Don't remember his either, and honestly, most of the songs were forgettable.
There was an Ace of Base song. That's what it was, I think.
And there was a Tenacious D song too, yes, that I remember. Ugh. But I think that was the heavy metal one.
Some cringeworthy stuff, to be sure.
Yeah, Ace of Base was done by Desiree. Desiree, I don't know if she was dark back then, because there was, she was part of a band, and so that was her, but, I kind of always known her as Desiree Sasha, which was another one of her band names.
Yeah, she was kind of like, I don't know if we mentioned her character before, but she was sort of like this sort of deus ex machina, you know, at the last second she kind of comes out of nowhere and becomes the sort of, like, ringer for the, side that's going up against the Gooch. And she's actually really, really good, and she actually makes him worried. But she's really there just because Jesse Ames's character unfortunately loses, even though she actually sings better than the guy that she's going against. But because she loses, you got to have somebody win so that the sides are even by the time you get to the ultimate battle. So that's kind of why she's there.
Yeah, what they should have done is had somebody else that wasn't a good singer. be partnered up with them. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, Jessie couldn't even fake being a bad singer. She's actually pretty talented.
Yeah.
And she did a great job in the Hall & Oates song. So we were pretty impressed by her.
And, you know, for me, what I really liked about this movie, and I can understand why you would like it as well. I mean, in addition to the branching out and doing something different, this was interesting just because it just seemed like it was a moment when you had a lot of actors in the Chris Seaver universe sort of start. You know, I mean, this is the first Heather Maxson movie, right?
No, not first movie. She was in a couple other things as small roles.
Small roles.
I think she was in, like, Anal Paprika 3.
I haven't seen that.
See, if you've never seen a Chris Seaver movie or whatever, and this is your first time listening and hearing this stuff, you're going to be like, what the hell? Are they talking about pornos and stuff? Anal Paprika 3? What?
Nom, nom, nom.
Menage a Death? I think that was what it's called.
As you do.
You know, she was in that, but she was, this was her first starring role.
Okay. But it's the first movie where she really kind of steps up into a bigger role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Josh Schwier's first role. He's, mm-hmm. he's obviously big in the Chris Seaver universe.
Now he definitely is.
Yeah. And it's funny because he was doing sort of your typical wingman role, which is not usually what you see him doing. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, he usually plays, like, I think because it was his first role, they were just trying him out and seeing what he was capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
When they realized how good he was, they continued to use him and put him in, like, more characters, you know, because he's really good at playing, like, a character, mm-hmm. you know. He's, what was his characters? Like, he does, like, Leo...
Leo DeShaft.
Oh my goodness.
Toblerone.
Such a great guy. Such a great character. And Paul loves. Funny. Paul loves it.
He's so funny. I really, he really made that character his own.
Yeah.
And then the lead guy. I mean, that's really his first movie to being a lead guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had done, like, short films and other things, but the first feature as being a lead, I believe.
And he's so young. I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. He's like 10 years younger than everybody else there.
And if you, you might know this or whatever, and other fans of Chris Evert will know, but was it Sean Green is actually Jesse Green's little brother.
Right.
And Jesse Green was one of the staple actors of Chris Evert's stuff, including, like, Quest for the Egg Salad and, like, Filthy McNastier, Maximum Douche, tons of stuff like that.
Hmm.
So I'm saying some crazy titles, but that's what they do.
That's what happens in the Chris Evert universe.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yep.
But so it's interesting seeing these guys. And then Jesse Ames just looks so different than what she normally, what I am used to seeing.
You're used to her being Marge and other these, like, goofy off-the-wall characters where she talks, like, in this weird accent. And
right,
she
right.
plays these weird characters. And this is, she's actually, she's still a different character and stuff, but she doesn't.
She's not quite off the as off the wall.
Right. So, yeah, she's great in this as well. And let's see. I guess Travis Inovina, I liked him. But I like him more in, like, other movies. Especially, like, Carnage for the Destroyer, which I believe was actually a movie made for him.
Mm.
See, that's what I like about Chris Evert, is he'll make friends with these people, like, his stars, his actors. And he'll make movies based around stuff that they're, you know, that they're really good at or something. Or, like, they, like this, like, he heard that story about AJ and just decided, let's make a freaking movie about it.
That's a great idea. I think you should emulate that.
I don't know. What am I going to do? Have a crazy person who loves cows?
There you go. Either that, or we could make a movie just for Continuity Monkey.
Whatever. Let's move on. So, we're going to, I guess, so we did the story. We pretty much talked about all the characters.
Yeah, I mean,
except there was one character that we did not mention, which was the Master. We talked about him, but we didn't mention who he was played by, which was Jason McCall. Which, while we were watching the movie, Paul was like, that guy looks familiar. I've seen him in a bunch of Chris Evert movies.
And right.
Jason McCall, it was a staple for a long time of being in his movies. But I think Jason, I mean, I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this. But I think Jason, you know, has a real job and, you know, isn't able to go out and make movies on the weekends like, you know, a lot of other people could. So he would come out when he could, and that's why they make a joke where he says, I believe you so much, I'm not going to show up for the rest of the movie. And he kind of leaves, and you never see him again, right. Of course. So
there are a few lines there. I mean, I like that one, and I liked, it's just for babies. That was kind of funny. But what about the guy who plays Sundance? He's not somebody that I recognize, unless I just forget.
Oh, we forgot. Well, I kind of mentioned him was Budnick Couteau.
Right.
Henrik Couteau. He's actually a filmmaker from New York.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he became friends with Chris when he discovered Chris's films and everything and stuff at a convention. And he made DVDs. So he would make Chris Evert these, like, all the DVDs that he would have. And so any ones with, like, commentary and other stuff. You know, Henrik Couteau would make them and everything like that. So, yeah, so that was him. He's just a goofy character. The only other movie I believe that, Henrik Couteau was actually in was, Filthy McNastiest Apocalypse Fuck.
So, third one?
Yeah, there's four.
Four.
There's four Filthy McNasty movies.
I have not seen all of them.
Yeah, I think you've only seen, what, one and two?
Yeah, I just love the idea that all you have to do is get friendly with Chris Evert, and he'll not only put you in a movie, but if you're good and he likes you, he'll end up building a movie around you. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, if he likes you, he'll put you in more movies, and he'll make a movie with you in it. So
that's great.
But yeah, Henrik Couteau, great director as well, and in a cheesy, fun kind of horror type way, you know, but he doesn't make the same movies as Chris, you know, or anything. Like, his movies are more, I guess, more try to be more mainstream indie, you know. Maybe we'll do one, if not, like, a video.
That'd be great.
So,
So I guess we could talk a little bit about the acting. I think from what I could tell, I mean, this is all fairly typical of the way these actors approach their characters and approach the lines in pretty much all of the Chris Seaver movies. They're all good in their way. You know what I mean? I mean, they're over the top, but they're sort of expected to be sort of over the top, and they all do a good job. There's nobody there that I don't believe. I think they all did a good job. Not bad.
I'm trying to think. There were some things that you didn't like when it came to acting. You got kind of annoyed, I think, by Casey's licking of his lips.
Yeah, that was a little... There are certain things like that annoyed me. There's an awful lot of fart noises that are unnecessary that are sort of... I mean, you know, again, it's part of the Chris Seaver universe is you get a lot of this sort of lowbrow toilet humor. I just thought it was sort of dragging the movie down a little bit. It didn't... A lot of it just seemed unnecessary.
Yeah. You know what I mean? No, I agree. The farting wasn't unnecessarily, but Becky's character kind of, like, it was a running joke with her. You know, like, she farted all the time. Sometimes you would hear it, sometimes you wouldn't, and she would just, you know, like, Jesse said something like, "Girl, did you just shit yourself?"
Right, right.
And she said, "I farted," you know, or whatever. Which, it just, you know, it just seems juvenile.
Yeah, and it's too much. I'll give you an example. There's one character in Blood Fart Lake who is cool until she shits herself. But she only does it the once, and it's only... the fact that it happens, you know, it just seemed a lot funnier just because it happened the one time. Whereas in this film, you know, it just kind of gets belabored, and several people do it. You know, I think the main character talks about doing it, and I think the Gooch, you know, is inferred that he's done it. It's just... There's too much of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about farting, and I think that might be, I mean, that's Chris Seaver's humor, so that's what he thinks is funny and whatnot, but I think maybe that might be a little bit of why it didn't go as mainstream as what he was hoping, because, you know, it came off a little bit childish.
Right.
But I don't know, I'm hoping that, you know, nowadays he kind of just does his podcast, and I think he just released a new movie, a remake of his Death of a Lantern and stuff. So maybe hopefully he'll be making more movies soon, or at least doing something, you know, like similar to what he used to do, because, I mean, it was fun. This is an old LBP movie, you know. So for most people who might not know, who may not be familiar with Chris Seaver made movies back in the, early 90s, I guess. Maybe even late 80s he started with his camera and everything. He started making movies and continued to do so. He would start getting some notoriety in horror conventions, because he would sell his VHS copies of his movies or whatever back in the day. And then eventually DVDs and I think now Blu-rays.
And when we say movies, I mean, a lot of them kind of come off as, you know, projects where you're going with your friends into your backyard and you bring your camcorder and you build your little plots around it. And that's kind of what those early movies certainly are very much like.
Yeah, when you look at he has this collection of movies that he did back in the, when he first started out and stuff. And they're called Vintage Seavage. And he would, you know, one was called Meter Man, and another one was a parody of From Dusk Till Dawn called From Almost Night to Almost Day.
Nah, I've never seen that one. I'd love to check that out.
Well, it's not the quality that he has now or anything, but it was shot on, like, a video camera and things like that. And, they're fun. Mm-hmm. You know, they're fun, goofy, silly little movies that he made with his friends when they were, like, I guess, home from school or, you know, whatever. I think when from Almost Night to Almost Day, I think that was shot when he was in high school, almost, you know, going into college age, you know, and everything and stuff. So I might be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that's when it was. And he shot with his friends, and they, you know, it was 96 or so when From Dusk Till Dawn. And, you know, and so he was able to go out and make these, like, you know, kind of full-length movies. They might not be, like, you know, 100 minutes or something. But I'm glad that they're only, like, 60 to 70 minutes long because, like, that's all you need. You know, you don't need a full-length movie because after a while you get bored. With Chris Siever movies, you barely ever get bored.
Yeah, generally that's the case. And you definitely hit upon the way I sort of approach Chris Siever movies is that they're almost always fun and silly and goofy and, you know, made in the spirit of just kind of having fun and laughing. It's, you know, for me, if this particular one, the problem ends up in the second half of the film because it just seems to grind down when the characters are all doing their singing. That's kind of where the fun stops for me. So that's kind of the difference that I have with this than, say, Ski Wolf or some of the other movies that I like from Chris Siever. And, you know, that's just the choice that he made as far as telling the story goes. I wish that the songs had been shorter. You know, I wish there'd been a little bit more about... I mean, it would have been fun to have seen, like, the montage thing, but I can see now why he didn't do it, because he was already, you know, planning out these longer scenes at the end that it just would have made the movie even longer.
I think he did it as kind of a joke anyway, because, yeah, like, you're expecting this sweet
it's part
training
of the tropes
montage, and then you don't get it.
Right, right.
I mean, people could say it's because he was being lazy, but it was probably because he just, you know, obviously thought it'd be funny if they didn't do it.
Do you have the commentary on this? Is there commentary?
There is not commentary on this. And that was kind of a bummer, but once again, I think it's because it was not a,
you know,
was not a, not actually a movie that they could sell or anything,
right,
like, in stores or anything. So it just sold us as a bootleg kind of thing. You know, he made copies on, like, iDVD or something and sold it.
Well, if we ever get a, you know, Chris Siever on our show, if we ever bump into him at a convention or anything, this would definitely be a movie I'd like to talk with him about and you know, see what he has to say, see what his thinkings are. Stop your jibber-jabbering and tell me!
Yeah, because he's one of those people that, you know, you can ask him probably anything about his films and he'll give you the honest truth about it, you know, which is kind of cool. I think that might be a little bit of his thing. He's brutally honest when it comes to his feelings on these projects. And
right,
I think he did enjoy working on Karaoke Kid. I can't speak for him, but I believe so. And you can kind of tell with this movie if that's the case, because it does come off as somebody who's, like, enjoying what they're doing.
Right. Definitely.
So I guess there wasn't, since it's not a horror film, there's not many, like, special effects or anything like that. Like, yeah, there's sound effects. There's the farting, you know, sound effects pretty much throughout the whole movie.
Right. Now, as far as post-production goes, there wasn't a whole lot going on. You know, the camera work isn't bad. You know, everybody seems to be okay there. I didn't see any mistakes like you do see in some of the earlier Chris Siever movies.
Were there any continuity errors?
I didn't notice any continuity errors. Monkey, you were silent, weren't you? He really was.
Yeah, which is weird because there usually is a continuity error. We were watching Bloody Giblets.
Right.
We've got to put that up on our.
We had a video review.
We got a video review of that one. I think we got to put that up at some point. Or did we? Did we already put that up?
I'm not sure. I don't think we did.
So there's that and Evil Knight that I have to put up, and but we watched Bloody Giblets, a short film. No, I don't think we did a review of it.
Yeah.
I want to say we didn't do a review of it. But anyway, because I think we were waiting for the other short film to watch the other thing together, so we could review both of them together. Because reviewing one short film is kind of short.
Right. I think you're right.
But anyway. Bloody Giblets was this other movie that Sean Green starred in or whatever, and that had a lot of the same kind of thing, but that's the thing, when it's a short film, a lot of the fart jokes and other things can go because it goes by that quickly. You know, when you watch a whole 70-minute movie, you know, with that stuff, it kind of starts to get kind of like, all right, you know, that was funny at first or whatever, but now it's kind of dragging you down.
But that had one or two continuity errors, as I recall.
It did.
But this one came off pretty clean. You know, like I said, there was no sound problems. As far as the camera angles, everything seemed pretty good.
Chris Seaver wasn't just randomly walking back and forth behind somebody.
I perfectly expected him, because he'll do that. He'll just, you know, he'll put his shirt over his head, and he'll do a goofy dance, or he'll do something strange, but, you know, he kind of restrained himself.
Which he had the perfect opportunity to do that.
He did.
Because there was a character that just, it was Casey Balker again, but Casey comes out there and starts, like, pounding on a drum or something, you know, or whatever it was,
right,
doing, like,
right.
percussions when he was doing his sweet dance.
He could
like
very
that.
Well have done that.
And that would have been great for Chris, but I guess Chris didn't feel like doing it and just wanted Casey to do it. I think Chris was concentrating on making this as good as he possibly could.
Right.
And that's probably another reason why the songs were in it and everything and things
right.
like that.
And not to mention the fact that there was so much footage of Lloyd Kaufman and Debbie Rochon. They were in there a lot more than I expected. Because, you know, with Lloyd, he usually pops in, says a few lines, and then goes. He had a lot of lines in this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
and it seemed a little like improv, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they told Lloyd what to say, and then Lloyd kind of made up his own thing. But
there was a little dance at one point, and yeah.
Oh, not a lot of points. He was dancing fool in this movie.
And Debbie Rochon is, as always, wonderful.
And she's hilarious.
Yes.
Just so funny and full of life and just, you know, having a blast. You
we
tell
love you, Debbie Rochon.
Oh, yeah. She's a sweetheart. Absolutely a big sweetheart. And so I love seeing her at conventions, but I absolutely love seeing her in, like, everything that she
right,
does.
Right,
so.
Right. Well, of course, she stole my heart in Tromeo versus Juliet.
Yeah, Tromeo versus Juliet. She was wonderful in that. But we're here to talk about, you know, here in this movie, which wasn't produced by Troma, but has, you know, these awesome stars. So
right,
that's
right,
awesome.
Right.
But yeah, that's so. Let's see what else. What else is there that we normally discuss? Is because normally there's things about like editing or whatnot, and there's just really, I mean, there's not much to say on.
No,
on a lot
and
of
it's interesting because. Again, typically when you get a Chris Seaver movie, you get a bouncy ska soundtrack, and you don't really get that this time.
Though in the beginning there was, I believe, there was one
I think there's a little
ska
bit in the beginning.
In the first opening scene, but then you get all the regular music, all the popular songs and stuff like that. So there wasn't much of a ska soundtrack for that.
Because wasn't he in a ska band?
I believe so.
Yeah.
It was the Skimods or Skimods, something like that. I don't know. An old band that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, you know, they did stuff that were, the Swanky Modes. That's what they were.
There you go.
God,
so there are a few other things, though, like the John Stamos thing pops in. That's kind of floated around the Seaver universe before. He had with this little, you know, connection with John Stamos.
Mm-hmm.
Then this time it's just the picture of John Stamos.
Oh, it's always just the picture of John Stamos.
Yeah.
That's a constant joke. It's like somebody put John Stamos in on the IMDb credit for one of the movies. And so somebody actually asked him, have you seen it? And apparently he said, no, but now I kind of want to. I think they deserve to send me a copy of it, you know, of their movies or something
nice,
like
nice,
that.
Nice.
And when I heard that, I just thought that was hilarious because, you know, like literally, it's just a picture of John Stamos, and they make, you know, they usually make some kind of joke to him or
right.
say something goofy about John Stamos.
Yeah, it's funny. Getting back to our 80s tropes, he's definitely one of those. So yeah, it's I don't know. I can't say that I disliked it. It's just, again, having seen so many other of Chris Seaver's movies,
it was just a little lackluster.
It just wasn't as funny as I was hoping it was going to be, I guess.
You know, it's one of those things that it's a comedy and not a...
Right.
It's a comedy and not a horror film.
Right.
And he's really good at horror comedy,
yes.
you know, than he is at, like, comedy, straight up comedy, maybe. So.
And when he's on, he's really on. I mean, the movie that I love that you don't like love as quite as much as Sex Squatch. I mean, to me, he was right on par for that, and that's just a perfect example of a horror comedy.
Exactly, and I enjoy Sex Squatch. I just don't love it as much as you do. I wasn't a big fan of the sequel either, but we did watch the sequel together,
right,
and everything.
Right.
You know, it's one of those movies that, like, Sex Squatch, period, interesting idea, kind of funny, do something different with Sasquatch, awesome, you know. But I don't think, like, today's audience or whatever, you know, like, most general public wouldn't be into it. But that's the funny thing is most general public would be into any of Chris Siever's movies.
Right.
Because he doesn't make it for them. He makes it for himself. And he's... You know, he's into that kind of silly kind of thing.
Although this movie probably has a little bit more of a mass appeal than some of his other films do.
Yeah, it's more, like I said before, it's more mainstream than he's ever. Maybe Geek War and Weird Seeds might be up there with that. And maybe Moist Fury, because it was a parody of, girl gang stuff, you know,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, I still want to see that.
We'll eventually watch it, even if it's on a DVD, like a YouTube review.
There's going to be some point where either through Indie Film Cafe or one of our video reviews or something, where we're going to hit every single Chris Siever movie ever.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
I've seen almost every one of them.
We're going to
I think I've pretty much seen all of them.
We're going to get Chris Siever completely covered.
But yeah, and I think that would be awesome because, you know, I think Chris Siever is one of those filmmakers who kind of deserves, you know, the attention and everything.
Absolutely.
It was so funny when I met you, and you had told me you knew who Chris Siever was. Most people I know don't have a clue who Chris Siever is.
Right. Well, he makes the kind of movies that you and I both like. I mean,
right.
You'd seen more than I had, but I know that I'd seen a lot more than most people had.
Yeah. I know Chris since I think 2004 or 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, yeah, around that time, because I had moved out and was living basically in this garage and renting his movies and buying his movies and stuff. And I loved it. I absolutely loved, I fell in love with his silly humor and everything. And back then, it's not like, you know, it is as easy as it is today to kind of get these things.
Right, right.
And so when I got them, I was just like, I was holding them like treasures, you know.
And then, you know, for me, when I find somebody, especially for an independent filmmaker, if I like a movie that I've seen, I tend to go and look for more of their stuff to see if I like it. So in Chris Siever's case, the first one I ever saw of his was the first Mulva movie. So Mulva's Zombie Ass Kicker. And I'm like, what the hell did this movie come from? This is fun. This is goofy and weird and silly. And, okay, it was my first introduction to BoneJack, but, you know, at that point, I just thought it was kind of fun. And I'm like, I got to find more movies from this guy. And I looked on, you know, the internet, and holy shit, this guy's got a ton of movies. So that's when I started looking around for him. And, you know, you're right, it's hard to get a hold of his stuff, at least initially it was. But I got what I could when I could, and I watched what I could when I could. So, you know, like I said, there's still a bunch of stuff that I have to see. So I'm glad that you decided to do this one for Indie Film Cafe, because there's always room for Chris Siever.
Yeah, we were just to give everybody an idea of what happened, we actually shot a project,
mm-hmm,
that we're not going to talk about right now, even though probably by this time this comes out, You'll already know about it if you're following Sick Flick Productions. But we shot a project together with some friends, and our friend Kim was here. And unfortunately, it went later than planned.
As it does.
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
A few extra takes here and there.
Yeah, so we were, you know, we went a little later. And, it wasn't just that. It's like everybody showed up a little later.
Right.
It just...
Bad, you know, weather.
Things happen, you know, whatever. You can't help that. But what ended up happening was we didn't shoot the... We were doing the podcast, and we had to do it late.
Right.
And later than planned. And Kim had to go home. She had to go all the way out to North Carolina.
3 or 4 hour drive.
So he
had a movie specifically set out for her. So it, without Kim, it didn't really make sense to do that film. We want to be able to do it with Kim because we think she would add so much to it. I mean, once you listen to her, you'll completely agree. So our regularly scheduled movie had to be changed.
It had to be changed. And I had to think of something that I... Because I didn't have, like, a list of ones, which maybe I should make a list of what I'm planning to do so that I can, you know, already have it ready as a backup if the ones I want to do aren't available to do. So I ended up picking this one.
Right.
Instead. And so we'll do the other one another day when, when we're able to get Kim back here to do it. And for now, I was like, well, what can we do? And we looked through like Amazon, and we looked through, Full Moon Streaming, and we looked through all these different ones. And, I mean, there's a million I could have chose, but I didn't know what the right one was for this particular one. And I was like, you know, let's go back. I believe the third movie that we did last year was Ski Wolf.
Right.
And I was like thinking, let's keep with that in mind. This is second movie, you know, or whatever. And this is normally, you know, the last time it was like you picked two and I picked two back to back and everything. This time it's, you know, so that was my first movie back. So maybe I was thinking this would be a perfect kind of follow-up. And it's almost perfect because of a lot of the same actors. Josh Swire was in Ski Wolf. Desiree was in Ski Wolf.
Heather Maxson.
God, I keep forgetting she was in that one,
Absolutely.
Too. Holy cow. That's right. I was like, wait, she wasn't in that one. And then, she was. She's that really silly character. And then Jesse Ames.
Mm-hmm.
It just has almost everybody that was in the first, was in that. So, like, it was just amazing to kind of... See, I didn't realize how many people were both.
And I keep saying we have to draw out the big board, and we got to have all the actors and characters that arranged out there to see how they all connect in the Seaverse.
Yeah, I mean, but they're all different, you know, mostly different characters. Sometimes he does have recurring characters, Teen Abe, BoJack, but there's the Marge and Leo DeChamps and different things like that. But in this one, he does. In this one, I think they're all new people, and you never see these people again.
Right.
They're in Wellsville and not BoJack. So, it's nice that you know he was able to do that.
Right.
Because, sometimes
something
it gets
different.
kind of old. You know, you want something a little bit new.
You know, Chris Seaver can always be relied upon. So if you're looking for a film, I mean, like think about it, like last year. You know, I thought we were going to do Barn of the Bloodlum, and then I couldn't find the movie. So I had to sort of scramble at the last minute and come up with a replacement, and it ended up being Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, which turned out to be a great choice.
Oh,
so
perfect choice. Right.
This works just as well, too, because we always know what we're pretty much going to get when it comes to Chris Seaver. We both like Chris Seaver, and he's definitely, definitely somebody that you think of with regards to independent film.
Exactly.
So he fits the bill in every kind of way.
Well, with that being said, let's do our rating.
Okay.
And once again, tell the listeners at home how we set up our rating.
Okay, so if you guys remember, we use our stinkometer, and the way it works is the stinkier the movie, the higher the score. So if you only get a 1, you're not doing so stinky at all. If you get a 5, you're kind of right in the middle, little whiff of stink there, good whiff of stink. But if you get a 10, oh boy, that's really, really stinky. You know, I mean, we're talking Neil Breen territory here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a 10.
Woo! That was ripe.
But I don't think that this will get a 10
out
of 10.
No. So
let's you go first, man, because this is your first time watching it.
Okay.
I want to hear your thoughts.
I don't remember exactly the score I gave to Ski Wolf last year, and I think when I compare the two that I liked Ski Wolf better.
Mm-hmm.
Not tremendously better. It's not like this is a much worse film or anything. I just, as far as the funness factor for me, I think Ski Wolf had a little bit more fun. And I think most of the ones that I've liked now, there are a couple of Chris Heaver movies that I have really sort of annoyed me, and this is definitely not one of those. So I think I would probably give this a 6.5.
Ooh, 6.5. Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny that you say that, because I was actually going to go with 7.
Okay.
You know, and I'm not saying, like, it's a bad movie or anything. Like you said, I think that what really killed it was the ending of the movie, with all the just too much.
That's higher than I expected, because you came into this saying, oh, we could do Karaoke Kid. Wow.
I'm so excited.
Right.
And then I watched it, and it's not like the excitement drained or anything. I mean, I still love seeing Heather. I still love seeing Sean. I love seeing all these, you know, characters. I forgot Henry Budnick Couteau was in it.
Right.
You know, it's been so long since I had actually sat down and watched the whole movie. And this is a movie that I put on occasion, you know, occasionally just to watch it again. You know, it is a movie that, and I still will say that I can still sit down and watch this movie. However, when I do that, I'll probably be playing on my computer or doing something, you know, where I'm not completely, you know, where I'm kind of distracted from everything.
Because, right.
Like I said, the ending is really slow with the too much music and stuff kind of drags it down. And I think most of the other stuff.
I'm surprised. I mean, I figured you to be a 3-4 tops.
No. I knew once I watched this again that my thoughts would change on it. Because, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe when I first thought in my head, oh, man, this is going to be like a 3. You know, on the stinkometer. But I watched it, and I was like, this is not as good as I remember it.
That's funny. You know? I was originally going to give it a 7, but we talked a little bit more about it. I felt a little bit more better about it. I'm like, well, it's stinky, but it's not quite so stinky. Still not as good as Ski Wolf, and not as good as, definitely not as good as Sex Watch or some of the other, like Blood Fart Lake. But, you know, Quest for the Egg Salad or some of the other ones that I really love.
Do you really love that?
I do. It's so goofy and weird.
I remember we watched that with Gary, and you were just like,
I think Gary's the one who hated it.
I know. But I thought he made you like start changing your mind on things or something.
Well, you know, a little bit. I still like it though. The nerd part of me just loves it because of all of the.
Oh, I love it too. But he kind of like
stuff.
I guess you gotta watch it with people who love it. You know, like if we had just watched it, we'd been like, oh my god, this is so silly. But, like, he was like, you know, like, and I think it's because he had seen Chris Seaver movies before.
Well, it's with at least with my friend Gary, I'm pretty sure he's very hit or miss, because I know that there's ones that he really thinks is funny, and there are others where he's just like, oh, all right, I'm not having this.
Yeah, it was too juvenile, but that's most of his stuff. I remember, this is a funny story, but when I first met, you know, I met Chris in person, but when I met him over online, I went to his website and I sent him a message saying, "Hey, I'm a, you know, I want to be a filmmaker, and I am this is back like 2004, as I said, you know, and I read about you on the Troma book, Make Your Own Damn Movie, which Chris Seaver was talked about on there, and they actually gave his website and stuff. So I was telling him I was, whatever, right? I want to check out his stuff and things like that. So I had actually rented Quest for the Egg Salad from Netflix that day, back when I used to have it where you could rent, you know, you would rent the movie and it would come to you in the mail, not like streaming these days, which is what everybody pretty much does. So I get a message from him on AIM. You remember AIM?
Right.
AOL Instant Messenger. So he messages me, and I didn't know the name, right, and stuff, and it was some wacky name. Don't even remember it now, but he contacts me and he was like, he said something wacky to me, and I was like, who is this? And he was like, this is Chris Seaver. And I was like, oh, hey, how did you get my AIM name? But anyway, that didn't matter. He got it from, you know, he probably looked it up on my email address and, you know, whatnot. And so he contacted me and he was like, glad to talk to you as a fan. And then I was like, well, I'm going to be checking out Quest for the Egg Salad soon, because that's coming to me in the mail. And he was like, if I never hear from you again, I understand. And I was like, uh-oh, you know, but I was like, okay. And so I watched Quest for the Exile, thought it was amazing for an independent movie to,
right.
you know, people in their backyards making a movie about, you know, Lord of the Rings
exactly.
and stuff, you know, like, and having fun. And,
right.
And Tina Krause is in it.
Yay!
It's adorable. I just... I don't think she's a huge fan of the movie itself, but,
yeah.
you know, I mean, I think if you talk to her, she'll laugh about it or whatever. She'll give me some stories about it, but, you know, it wasn't one of those things that, like, you know, look, I didn't understand how people can do this. And so now it's, like, kind of cool. Like, I chatted with Chris Sieber. And
it's an interesting story just because, you know, I remember going onto Chris's YouTube page, and he had a post where he's interviewing Todd Sheets, and there's some similarity there about, you know, where Chris Sieber is a fan of Todd Sheets and reaches out to him and talks to him about stuff and kind of gets the torch passed from Todd Sheets to him mm-hmm. with regards to carrying it on. And then you're a beginning filmmaker, you reach out to Chris Sieber, you guys become friends. Torches passed to you, you know, maybe some young guys out there is gonna love your stuff and then is gonna, you know, contact you, and then you're gonna pass the torch along. And then, but the thing is that, you know, Todd Sheets's movies are very different from Chris Sieber's movies, and your stuff is very different from Chris Sieber. So it's this great torch of independent cinema that's getting passed along, but everybody who picks it up and carries it does it their own different way, which is great.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. With my films and everything, I do have a universe, but it's not like the Chris Sieber universe.
Right.
I'm not trying to be Chris Sieber, because, I mean, there's only one Chris Sieber, you know what I mean? Like, he does his stuff his goofy way.
Right.
And people praise him. Even when if I ever tried to do something like his, I couldn't, because that's just not the way my brain works, you know, or whatever. And Chris Sieber can, you know, could probably, you know, Chris Sieber could probably do something more like Kevin Smith-like if he wanted to.
And I would love, love, love to see a mashup of, say, a Chris Sieber version of Clerks.
Yeah.
I would freaking love that.
I think that is Geek War, because that is set in a comic book shop.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So you might like that movie.
I'll have to check it out.
Rainn Brown is in it, so I think you'd
Yay.
Enjoy it. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing. But anyway, I guess that's pretty much it. We'll tell you guys a little bit more about what's going on. Give you guys a little heads up on things. Right now, as we said, we were planning to have some people here, and then it just didn't work out.
Yeah, we went too late.
We are going to do some more special guests at some point. I think next month there will be some special guests. I don't really want to go into that yet.
Well, that's the thing, is you never know, because we have these things all planned out to shoot, but sometimes shooting just goes on longer, and then people still have their homes and lives they have to get back to.
I don't think it'll happen next week, but next month, but the next podcast we do, Paul's picking.
Oh, yeah, and I already know exactly what we're getting.
Oh, boy. Hey, I didn't torture you, okay, with this.
I know.
This movie wasn't torturous. This movie's actually pretty fun, you know, so.
Except for the last part.
I know, but that wasn't torture. It was just blah,
right.
you know, kind of thing.
Right.
Where I liked some of the jokes in it, too, though. Like, and Lloyd and Debbie did make that a bit more fun.
Are you saying you didn't like some of the jokes in Actium Maximus?
Were there jokes in Actium Maximus?
The movie was a joke.
Yeah, a whole movie was a joke, but I don't think, yeah. I don't know. It wasn't, you know, it was kind of boring. I hate to say it. It was kind of like, oh my God, will this movie end? And it was short. I think it was Chris Sieber short.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, it was like, oh. Anyway, yeah, so. But, you know, if you guys stuck with us so far in the second season, we really appreciate it. sorry guys. But yeah, we really appreciate it, and we love hearing from you guys. If you guys enjoyed this, please let us know. Write to us. Tell us what you guys think. Is there something Is there a movie that you guys want us to watch or something?
We'll watch it.
We'll watch it, and we'll do stuff about it.
If you can outstink the experts, we will definitely give you props. If you can suggest a movie that we think is just incredibly stinky and we can't stand it, we will
let
you know.
If it's worse than Neil Breen, we'll watch it.
There you go. Remember, we are doing the movies that Riff Tracks and Mystery Science Theater refuse to do.
Exactly, because if they refuse to do it, we want to see that.
Hell yeah!
You know, I don't think that you don't think they'll do Karaoke Kid.
Oh, I don't think so. But have I got some stink lined up for this year?
Oh man, I see. I'm nice to you guys. I give you guys movies that aren't as stinky. I don't think. except last year, I had a couple ones that were pretty bad.
I had some good ones.
You know, Romeo and Juliet wasn't horrible, but it wasn't, you know, wasn't a masterpiece or anything, and neither was Ankle Biters.
Oh, God.
So I, you know, or Santa Slay, which got a lot of reaction from Jen.
Yeah.
Jen, we miss you. We
miss
hope
you,
you come back in a couple months or something, you
yes.
know, if you can. You know, we'll definitely have you back anytime.
She would have liked this, honestly.
I think the farting might have been a little bit much.
A little juvenile, but as far as a Chris Seaver movie goes, this is one of the safer ones, I think, to have shown her.
Yeah. The milk scene, though, that was a little, you know, that was a little bit, it's not as bad as the Ski Wolf sex scene.
No. That almost broke her.
yeah. So, I don't know. It was pretty bad, but it was fun.
Right. But we miss you there, Jen. Going back.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to be listening to this when she hears this Chris Seaver movie.
Sorry, I got something special lined up for her.
Oh, if she ever comes, if she comes back, I'm sure you got
something. I'm sure she will.
Alrighty.
She's asking. She's like, when are you going to fit me in? It's like, we got your sign lined up. Don't you worry.
Don't be putting words in her mouth.
Would I ever do that?
You did it the first time we met, you know, and everything.
I knew what was in her heart.
Oh, well. So you know she'll be back.
No, she'll be back, definitely.
Well, anyway, thank you guys so much. Please check out indiefilmcafe.reviews.
Yes.
Check out sickflickproductions.com.
Definitely.
And check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Indie Film Cafe. We need to get a social media guy.
Et cetera.
We need to get a social media person.
We definitely need somebody who's going to help us out because we're all over the place.
This one was pretty all over the place.
All over the place.
Couldn't help that one.
Oh well.
We need a, you know, a sketch or something, like a little, you know, we had one before.
We did.
Yeah, the plan, but not this time.
Who needs plans?
Yeah, we throw plans right out the window.
Right out the window.
All right. Well, if you guys stuck with us for this long, which is longer than the last episode,
right.
You know, thank you guys so much. We love you. And we can't wait to check out what's next. What's
All right,
coming up.
Guys. We'll see you on the flip side.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.